Les colloques du Collège de France.
So welcome back after the lunch break. It is my pleasure to chair this session and to introduce the first speaker of the afternoon session, Annabel T. Gallop. She is the lead curator of Southeast Asia at the British Library in London. Her main research interests are in Malay and Indonesia manuscripts, letters, documents, and seals, and the art of the Quran across the Indian Ocean world. She published extensively, but I just mentioned a couple of articles and books. Migrating Manuscript Art, the Sulawesi Diaspora Geometric Style of Quranic Illumination, the Royal Malay Edicts from Aceh, Sarakata from the 17th to 19th centuries, and the catalogue of over 200 seals from Southeast Asia, entitled Malay Seals from the Islamic Board of Southeast Asia from 2019. She was also elected a fellow at the British Academy in 2019. And without any further ado, I give you the floor.
Thank you very much indeed, Claudia. And firstly, like everybody else, I would like to start with enormous thanks to François Desroches for convening this wonderful conference and for giving me the opportunity to present. And I say thanks not just for myself, but I also talk on behalf of my constituency, Islamic Manuscripts from Southeast Asia, which always need and have to fight for a position to be considered within the broader context of manuscripts of the Islamic world. But I do know that they do need a little bit of help to contextualize them. So I will start with a map to show you where the manuscripts I'm talking about come from. So just a little bit of background. There are probably about 1,000 Quran manuscripts from Southeast Asia documented in collections worldwide. Most of them are held in Southeast Asia itself, and about 100 are held in institutions, mostly in Europe, a few in North America, and a few in the Middle East as well. The great majority of these 1,000 manuscripts, I would say almost about 90%, probably date from the 19th century, so you have to shift quite a long way forward in time from most of the subjects of the talks you've been hearing over the past day or so. So most of these, of those 1,000 manuscripts, there are about 200 to 300 illuminated manuscripts. And of course, that's where a lot of the interest lies from the perspective of the art of the book in Southeast Asia and as part of the broader art of the book in the Islamic world. So most of these illuminated manuscripts are also from the 19th century, including those in the more well-known now artistic styles from Aceh, for example, north of Sumatra, from Java, and from the east coast of the Malay Peninsula, where they're very prominent schools of Islamic art from Terengganu and Patani. However, from the earlier period, and here we're talking the 17th and 18th centuries, there were probably only about no more than, say, 30 illuminated Quran manuscripts known worldwide. And of those, about 13 or so, coalesce in a style, in a sort of artistic school, which I have called the Sulawesi Diaspora Geometric School, and that's what I'm talking about today. And I'll say a bit more about this now. And so firstly, about the rather long and clunky title, and the reason is that actually each of these three terms, Sulawesi, Diaspora, Geometric, does actually capture a key attribute of these manuscript, of this manuscript style and school of manuscript art. Sulawesi means that quite a lot of them are associated with the island of Sulawesi, and I'm just going to go back and highlight it. So they're associated with Sulawesi, but the reason the word diaspora is in the name of this school is because they're not necessarily from the island of Sulawesi itself. They, quite a lot of the scribes, that, so of the 30, of there are 13 manuscripts in this group, seven have colophons. Quite a lot of scribes in their nisba, they have the ethnic terms, Albugisi, Makassari, referring to their ethnic groups, which are from South Sulawesi. But the Bugis and Makassar peoples of Sulawesi are renowned as seafarers, sea captains, warriors, mercenaries. And in fact, in English, the word bogeyman comes from Bugis, because the Bugis were such feared warriors in the 17th and 18th centuries. So they're associated, these Qurans are associated with the diaspora of Bugis and Makassar groups throughout island Southeast Asia. They have long migrated and settled all over the different islands. And the term geometric is because the typical features of this style of illumination are unrelentingly geometric in outline. So you can see the outlines of the decorated frames are sort of straight, vertical, horizontal, diagonal lines, and circles or part circles or semicircles. What you don't get are the sort of undulating, sinuous, ogival arches, which you more normally associate with Southeast Asian illuminated Qurans. So the prime descriptor comes from the art historical visual impact of these manuscripts, but an absolutely key feature is that they are associated with a very, very deep engagement with the Quranic sciences. So in these manuscripts, you find very dense marginal annotations, often covering, you know, the whole page. You can see the variant readings, the Qira'at, often, comments from the Hadith on the value of reading particular surahs at particular times, and other notes, and also quite often a lot of supplementary texts at the beginning, for example on Tajweed, and at the end a lot of prayers for recitation on completion of the Quran, and a real attention to the science of statistics, of numerology, of the division of the Quran into constituent parts, either the standard divisions into 30, 60, etc., but also the statistics of the number of verses, number of words, number of characters in the Quran. And they quite often in this school have full colophons in Arabic. So of the group of about 13, seven have full colophons. And that, it has to be stressed, is very unusual for Southeast Asia. So of the full corpus of around 1,000 Quran manuscripts, I would say only about maybe 3-4% have colophons. So this small corpus from the 17th, 18th century tells us much more about themselves than we are able to easily find out for the majority of 19th century manuscripts. So I mentioned in total there are 13 of these core members of the Sulawesi diaspora geometric style. I call them exemplars of the style because they are they fulfill all the characteristics, and they're going to be, the reason I use the term exemplars is I'm going to be contrasting them in this presentation with localized versions of the style. But because of the presence of colophons, you can see that we have been able to date seven of them, and the colophon, so these locations relate either to the place of creation, which is given in the colophon, or the location where they are found, which is often the same place, or it might not be, but that's all the information we have. But the point of the map is to show you how distributed they are right across the archipelago. And to give you some idea of scale, it's about 3,500 kilometers from end to end, so that's greater than the distance from London to Cairo. These 13 exemplars can be divided into two chronological groupings. These are the four earliest from the 17th century, with quite a strongly red and blue palette. Two of them are dated. Top left is the earliest dated example, 1677. But of great interest is the one on top right, which is dated 1690. And that was copied by a scribe from Sumatra, from Rawa in Sumatra, or Rawi, his Nispa. But it was copied in Zabid in the Yemen. Zabid was a place which attracted a lot of Southeast Asian scholars to settle and study en route to the Hijaz, often for extended periods. So it's a name which is absolutely, you know, it's very familiar within within studies of, you know, Islamic learning in Southeast Asia and transmission routes of texts and studies of the Hajj, but much rarer to find it attested in the colophon of a manuscript. So these are the four from the 17th century. The remainder are from the nine manuscripts from the long 18th century, because the last dated one is 1804, was copied in 1804 in Bone in South Sulawesi. That's the only one which is held outside Southeast Asia. It's in the Aga Khan Museum in Toronto at the moment. All the others are held in Southeast Asia. And I've put the slides like this to really to emphasize the extraordinary fidelity in the shape of the frames over the course of a long period and in different parts of the archipelago. And I particularly draw your attention to this sort of pyramidal clump of three circles, which is one of really the defining features of the style, and you'll see it recurring in various guises in different manuscripts in the course of my talk. So up to this point is where I got to in my last article published on this school, which is really the description, categorization of this group of manuscripts and identification of the 13 exemplars. There's always been this extraordinary question of how there's been so much fidelity to this style. It's not a question of just adherence to general sort of principles of, of what a decorated frame should be like in a particular regional part of the world. The exact similarities here really bespeak of a direct visual contact with a model or a prototype, so a direct copy. A partial answer has come from a deeper study of these manuscripts. I mean, I have to say it's very difficult to study. Not a single one has been fully digitized, and they're all held in scattered locations in Southeast Asia. I've only seen half personally, and others I've only learnt from publications or from images shared very generously by friends and colleagues, particularly my colleague Ali Akbar in Indonesia. But from a further really close study, I've worked out that of the nine 18th century Qurans, at least five, the illuminated frames were done by the same artist, and the texts within the frames, either the first two, the Al-Fatiha and the beginning of Al-Baqarah, or the last two surahs, are in the same hand, which of course might be the hand of the artist. So these were all done on separate bifolia, which were then integrated with the manuscripts. So they're all blank on the reverse. But it doesn't mean necessarily they weren't created at the same time as the manuscripts, because at least three and possibly four of the manuscripts might be by a single scribe, and they might have been put together at the same time. There's quite a little bit of work still to do on the unpicking of these individual manuscripts. So it's a kind of partial answer to one of these questions. Why are they so similar? Well, I mean, if five of them were by the same artist, you know, then it's like an easy answer, but it actually raises more questions, because they are located all over the archipelago, and there are still three others which are exactly the same, which were copied in locations as different as Banten in West Java, Kedah on the Malay Peninsula, and Bone in South Sulawesi. So that's sort of, there's still a little bit of work to do on this group, but the main subject that I wanted to speak of today is to discuss the impact of this group of Qurans, which are held all over the archipelago and in very elite circumstances. So the two on the bottom, which are more or less identical, are both held in Ternate, in the royal collection. So Ternate is in the northern Moluccas, One of the other members of this group was copied at the court of the Sultan of Brunei. Another one was copied at the court of the Royal Court of Kedah. So they have an association with the highest echelons in the state. And we're going to find that throughout the archipelago, they've left a long sort of shadow into the 19th century. So moving first of all to Ternate, which holds these two manuscripts. So these two manuscripts, the illumination is both by the same scribe. The hands of the Quranic texts are also by the same scribe. But one of them is full of paratexts, which evidently came at a later date, whereas the other one is much cleaner. So one of them became like the working copy and is today regarded as part of the royal regalia, whereas the second one, which is still in the royal collection, is just treated like a normal manuscript and stored with the other manuscripts. So these are three other Quran manuscripts held in the royal collections in Ternate, one in the Palace Museum on the left, and the other two are in the Royal Mosque. And this is what I'm now going to explore, which is what I call the localized examples of the Sulawesi diaspora geometric style, where you see the localization taking place through various different strategies. Sometimes it's a question of the colors. The very, very somber palette is being lightened and becomes more colorful. But particularly the very strong geometric character of the frames is sort of being sort of subverted with this a reversion to what I would feel is a more kind of what you associate with Southeast Asia, a more sort of sinuous undulating outline. But you can still see the key Sulawesi elements, these pyramidal clumps there. And here you can just see them, but they're beginning to morph into slightly different forms. Moving on to another case study, and this is the island of Bima, sorry, the kingdom of Bima on the island of Sumbawa, which is to the east of Bali. So after Bali, you have the island of Lombok and then the island of Sumbawa, which has several Muslim kingdoms on the island. So this is the royal Quran of Bima. And it was obviously created in the Sulawesi style, or you know, a near exemplary version, but you know, almost but not quite, with three decorated frames at the beginning, the middle, at Surat al-Kahf, and at the end. Now, of course, the opening pages of a Quran are those that get the most wear, and they're most often opened, and in any Quran you'll find that they're the most damaged. So in this Quran, the original opening pages have obviously been lost, and they have been replaced with a new pair, which are illuminated in a completely local style, which is really an explosion of sort of floral patterns and instincts. So in this case, you can see how a locally illuminated pair of frames has been sort of assembled and added onto the core Sulawesi style Quran to create a more hybrid artifact. So moving through the archipelago, and on to Mindanao in the southern Philippines, where nearly all the Qurans, to a very large extent, reflect Sulawesi influence. But here the way that the localization has happened is not so much by turning geometric straight lines into undulating lines, but it's more a way of deconstructing all the constituent elements of the geometric frames, the triangles, the pyramidal clusters of the circles, and sort of stringing them out and reassembling them in sort of rather inventive and unusual ways. Like here you find the three semicircles on the inside, which you would never find normally. You've got the strung out bits. Anyway, you can see all the constituent elements, but they've been put together in a different way. So just whizzing through to another style from the Minangkabau area of West Sumatra, very similar thing happens as in Mindanao. The constituent elements are sort of rolled out. In other parts of Sumatra, again, you see some quite sort of almost classic examples, but in a very floral, in a completely different palette here, blue from a royal collection in Palembang. Aceh, North Sumatra, which is one of the richest Quran cultures, where there are about 100 illuminated Quran manuscripts, Of those 100 in the Acheni style, about 5 exhibit the Sulawesi influences, and again, you keep a track of these pyramidal clusters. And so on to, Java and Madura, a royal manuscript from Madura. So the other sort of manifestation, like in Aceh, you have a Quran, which might have 2 or 3 frames, sets of frames, one in a local style and one in a Sulawesi style, and similarly in another Quran from Java or Madura, which has 2 pairs in a sort of deconstructed, localized Sulawesi style, and a final pair in a pure Javanese style. So what the point is really to realize how the impact of that exemplary Sulawesi diaspora geometric style in the 17th and 18th centuries has permeated all over the archipelago in localized forms. So this study is really sort of, it's led visually, which it has to be, because I've mentioned that almost very, very few of these Qurans have colophons. They don't tell you when they were copied or where they were copied. It's just a question of finding out mostly where they're held and linking them up with other known Qurans. And there are about 50 examples of these localized styles. But these observations really lead to much bigger questions, which are going beyond art history, to say, where did these come from? Why did this group of Qurans attain such a august and auspicious position in the societies, in the kingdoms of the archipelago, and why do they continue to have such an impact? Because it's strange that the evidence of such a highly advanced level of Quranic learning as is manifested in the exemplary manuscripts can't be mapped onto any known Islamic networks in Southeast Asia. I mean, studies of trajectories of ulama and of particular schools of Islamic learning, particularly, say, for example, in Aceh or Palembang, don't match this evidence of those particular Quran manuscripts. I mean, it could be hypothesized that this evident urge to localize the form in the examples that we've seen speak of something that had been brought in from outside and, when left to its own devices within Southeast Asia, was localized. But if so, where did it come from? The idea is always, of course, not from the obvious, more well-known models, but perhaps from the Indian Ocean world, where we're only just beginning to see where manuscripts that come that turn up. Things from the Swahili coast, from Harar, from Yemen with the Zabidi connection, Oman, don't really answer the question. But there's just one area which is perhaps even less studied than Southeast Asia, and that is the southern coasts of India, the Malabari and the Coromandel coast, where nothing has been written on the materiality of the Islamic manuscripts. Nothing has been published. I first saw these pictures on Twitter and got in touch with the account holder, who very kindly gave me permission and sent me more images to share. And you can just see hints of, the pyramidal clusters and the same. There are differences, but there are, greater similarities to anything else. And so I'm not going to be able to say any more, but I think that's the direction for the research at the moment. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.